Hello, everyone. This is your host, Hunter B. Gunn, once again, the Moz House Podcast. This is kind of a different episode, solo podcast episode. It's going to be much shorter than usual. Have a cool topic, the Circassian. We're going to be discussing that. Mostly just me giving you guys information. I guess we're not going to be talking about it together. But just me talking about it, giving you lots of information I've gotten. And I guess before we begin, anyone that's ever listened to podcasts, just thank you. Let's see, this will be our 16th podcast episode, which honestly, in the grand scheme of things, is not a ton of episodes, but it's been a lot of work put into all of them. You guys have seen me go from what I thought was not very good, nervous about doing podcasts, to even just talking, which didn't make any sense to me. I like talking in person, and in person it's almost easier, but once you get recorded, you never know what's going to happen. Well, I guess you know what's going to happen, but just in your mind, you make up like, am I going to say the wrong thing? Who knows? People can be mad. Yeah, I've gotten used to it at this point. No one's gotten upset. But yeah, we hit. Also doesn't seem like a lot. I mean, it seems like a lot to me, but throughout the entirety of the podcast, over 800 people have downloaded and listened across the United States. I'll bring up some of the more interesting places people have listened to. It's people from Japan, South Africa, France, Vietnam, Taiwan, and Singapore. If I called you out, thanks for listening. I'm surprised it reached all the way over there. It's cool having your voice heard. Thanks to all the artists and residents that have allowed me to interview them and talk to me. They've all been great. Really helps me get to know them. And hopefully I enable them to have more people know what they go through. Stuttering a little bit there. All right, so I have this pamphlet that my Aunt Denise gave me, who is also the workshop director at Moz House. And she's a great artist, so she actually did all the artwork of this pamphlet. It's not really a pamphlet, it's like a kind of almost like a book. It has all these excerpts about the Circassian. And so my Aunt Denise Silvadenis, did all of the sketches, and then the composition of the booklet is composed by Shane Weeks. Shout out to Shane. So he put together all the information, and my Aunt Denise Weedemo put together all the sketches, and they made this very informative homemade pamphlet to tell the story of the Circassian, because it's not many people know it is this shipwreck that happened over here where we lost a lot of Shinnecock men. And I'm just going to read some things and hopefully be an interesting topic for you guys to learn about. So it was created by this, where I'm getting all this information from, the Shinnecock Historical Society. And just want to give them credit. I'm not 100% sure what the rules are with doing reading straight out of a book, kind of, but if I get in trouble, hopefully I'm able to, since I actually know these people, hopefully I won't get in too much trouble. And I just want to give people out an interesting topic I always thought needs to have more of a lens to it. So, the Shinnecock Historical Society was formed in early fall 2018 because the community wanted to review Shinnecock history, and this is one of the booklets that they compiled together. They have a bunch of documents here from all sorts of different news outlets and some first-hand accounts. Okay. So, I guess I should describe this art to you because it's so cool. So this artwork for this excerpt is called The Circassian, the End of an Era. And it is a drawing of six natives on the shore and the Circassian, and then a rowboat with five people on it, and which kind of look like pilgrims because of the hats they're wearing, and then the whale, and the giant, like a nice whale over there. Okay, so I'll read it now. Towards the end of the 1800s, the golden age of whaling was nearing its end. It is likely that the loss of Shinnecock men on the Circassian was a leading factor for its demise. The recent drowning of the Shinnecock Indians on board the wreck of the Circassian was nearly expurgated what has once a large and powerful tribe. The New York Times, January 11th, 1877. So, some background information on that is the towns surrounding us used the wreck to say that all of our men died in the tribe, and now we were extinct. And they use this as type of a land grab situation. There's like, oh, they're all dead now. Well, you can just start taking stuff. They don't need any more space. So keep going back to the reading. It was described in many media sources around the time that the Shinnecock people were going extinct. It was reported that the flower of the tribe was lost due to the Circassian shipwreck. This resulted in an undeclared land claim of Shinnecock territories. The obituaries of these men are proof that we remained here, and those remain here still today. So, one thing when they were saying that we were extinct, is all those men, except for one, had families and their own kids and wives, and I'm sure even the one that was not married had brothers and sisters. So, it was just bullshit in the end. So now these are some excerpts regarding the Circassian from different books and papers. And I'm going to read. So there's just some bit more background on it. The British ship, the Circassian, was an iron ship of 1,500 tons built in Bedfist, Ireland in the year 1856. And in 1875, it was owned by DeWolf and Company of Liverpool, England. Her dimensions were length 242 feet and breadth or beam 39 feet and depth of 22 feet. It's a pretty big boat. Let's see, what's the other one I wanted to read? There's a bunch here and some of them I've lost them. I didn't want to mark up this booklet because I wasn't sure how many there were. Okay. So the captain, Luther Burnett, went out with his crew to the ship and urged those men to come ashore. For said, "This is your last chance, for no vessel can withstand the coming storm, and my boat will be the last to come out here." The sea at the time was very rough and angry. The Indians were good surfmen and knew the facts as well as the captain did, and probably would have gone ashore had it not been the false courage that was dealt out to them at the time. Then the line or the rope from the ship's masthead to the shore, on which the breeches buoy was operated, by which it was left so that they could come back safely to the shore, was ordered to be cut and cast off by those in authority of the ship. So, someone had, one of the men had, because of the storm that was coming, we knew, and they had been working to get, the ship was stuck in a sandbar beforehand. So, they had hired us to retrieve the things on the boat, I forgot the word for what's on a boat, like the merchandise, basically. And once one of them realized that there was going to be a huge storm, one of them left. And the owner of the boat said to all the other natives there that if anyone else left, no one would get paid for the 2 weeks that they'd already been working. And then, while they were out there, they cut the line, one of the safety nets was like, they had this line from here to the boat so they could kind of like pull themselves back, and someone cut the line so they couldn't leave. And this next one is kind of describing what had happened as the boat started to fall apart. At 8 o'clock in the evening, the main mast of the Circassian fell. That meant she was beginning to break up, but nothing could be done. New agonies were in store. The wind chopped around to west-southwest and blew the hurricane with hurricane force. More than 100 people gathered helplessly on the wind-swept beach, could only groan as a change of wind failed to bring calmer weather. Then on the winds of the wind came the strains of voices singing, "Nearer, nearer, my God, nearer, my God, to thee." It was a very religious Shinnecocks, meeting death as courageously as they knew how. So, I guess the people that are still in the boat, were they knew it was over. So they just decided to join together in song as the ship kind of went down. And this is the one sentence excerpt from Sketches from Local History. The dead, frozen bodies were picked up all the way from the wreck to Montauk. So people who live around in Southampton know where the cut is this beach. That's where the wreck was, and Montauk is not very close. It's close, but not really. So, and it was middle winter, so all the bodies were going everywhere. Yeah. This is a pretty horrific incident. So, the next section of this pamphlet they created has this nice title, Whaling, with the Circassian and a whale and two little houses. I'm going to read this entire section. Hopefully this is interesting to you guys, because it is to me. And this is my first time doing a solo podcast, so anyone has any suggestions on anything, because I'm going to be doing this more often now, because I would like to have an episode out every 2 weeks on a schedule, at the very least. We're still going to be doing with the residents and everything, of course, but sometimes there's not a resident within that 2 week time frame. Like, we have a resident right now. We're recording our own episode tomorrow, but that would be 3 weeks wait, and we don't want to do 3 weeks wait anymore. We're trying for 2 weeks every time. So if anyone has any topics, if you made it into this video, you could find me on Instagram at HunterBegun. Just be like, oh, do you know anything about this? We'd love to, whatever. Yeah, so suggestions, comments are always greatly appreciated. Never really get to talk to you guys directly. This feels like a one-on-one show, kind of. It's interesting. Completely different vibe than talking to someone else and asking them questions and then having a conversation with someone right in front of me. Then just, there's no one really here with me. Alright. Alright, so this part is called Offshore Whaling, Shinnecock Seamanship, and the Significance of the Whale. Whaling and the whales themselves have always been a significant variable in our traditional culture here on Shinnecock. Long before the colonists arrived, the people of Long Island and New England hunted and harvested whales from our waters. We were the masters of every technique of fishing, including all that exists today. Some of our canoes were said to hold up to 100 people. Due to our abilities at sea, our people's skill set was a necessity on the ships. Our people's skill sets was a necessary variable on the ships of the great whaling industry. Though only a couple of our people commanded the title of captain, such as Ferdinand Lee, dozens of Shinnecock men and hundreds of our sister villages or tribes were aboard these ships. People traveled with the ships all around the world. Okay, the next part is about priests, and I'm just going to skip over that part. So this is from the journal The Mecock Station, titled The Wreck of the Circassian, in 1876. Oh yeah, so this happened December 30th, 1876. It was the day the wreck happened. Okay, so Friday, December 29th. The day comes in with moderate northerly winds and a small sea. At 7 p.m., Aratus Hasley discovered and reported that he thought was a signal distress from the ship, the Circassian, and Luther Burnett, one of the crew tending the wreckers on board the ship, to the station and confirmed the same. We at once proceeded to get the gear in readiness to rescue the persons on board. At 8 p.m., everything was in readiness. Guns shotted and line flaked on the beach. Not sure what that means. Guns shotted and line flaked on the beach. I guess the guns had like rope on them, and they're shooting them towards the ship so people could grab on. I know they were doing that with cannons. They would shoot a cannonball with some type of line attached so that people on wrecked ships close to shore could grab on and pull themselves back in. Okay. The wind suddenly chops around to the southeast. The southwest, sorry. With rain and blowing heavily, which brought everything to the leeward and forced us to shift their position, so they had to move. Because it was the wind, everything was just getting too much where they were before. After much time being spent in changing positions, God, I can't talk today, and our match failing to burn properly, we succeeded in firing several shots, but none of them on board the ship. Owing to the darkness of the night and the strong current running along the shore, it would have been impossible to tell whether they had the line or not. We were obliged to take position a full 50 yards back, or close under the sand hill, on account of the extreme heavy sea and full tide. Okay. I feel like I can't read for some reason. So I'm going to put on my glasses. Make sure. It's not only me that's having this problem. I think written like old English. I don't know. That's why I'm having problems with it. So what happens there? Let's go over what they just said. So yeah, they couldn't get any of the lines to the ship when they were firing it from where they were, or they at least they couldn't tell because it was so dark. As you can imagine, it gets dark much earlier in the winter. So 8 p.m. on December 30th. That's basically you can't see. Okay. So the boat was getting kind of taken further and further away. So at some point, the mainmast fell by the force of the storm, the sea constantly breaking her over. And they could see with the glasses of the station, the men in the rigging. But about midnight, the tide fell off, and we saw the lights on her deck, and the ship still whole. But her deck completely swept fore and aft. Now, those are some boating words that I'm not really familiar with. Aft. It's probably the front and the back torn in half, I'm guessing. I could be wrong. Okay, so this next part is December 30th. The last part I just read was December 29th. And this is the next entry, the day. So, this day comes with the heavy westerly gales, cloudy weather, and heavy seas running. At or about 2 p.m., discovered that the men on board the ship had again been obliged to take the rigging. The sea again broke over her. At 3:30, or thereabouts, discovered that she had broken in two, the fore part settling down, he at foremost, and the aft part stern foremost, the mizzen still erect, a rigging full of men. At 4 p.m., the mizzen gradually careened over the port, and about 4:30 p.m. settled into water. Soon, the reafter, four men were hauled out of the surf, being all that are saved out of 32 people on board. They previously securing boat's buoy and arranging it with ropes to hold on by. Captain Henry E. Hunting, superintendent of life-saving station service, five of crew from station number 11, five of the surf crew tending the ship, and many old and experienced men and shipmasters residing in space were present at the disaster. Okay. So, the ship got completely destroyed by the storm, basically. I'm realizing now, I probably should have, I did a lot of research on what was actually happening, but not about the words that they were using. So I honestly cannot anyone knows, I mean, not anyone, but not everyone knows, like, what these words are. The boat lingo. I never had a boat besides, like, a canoe. Yeah, but from what I can tell, just general context, everything basically got destroyed. Yeah, so there's a list of 10 of the men who gave their lives to the sea. And these, once these people, they confirmed these guys, these Shinnecock were dead, they, the rest of the town decided to go ahead and start taking advantage and say that we were now extinct. Alright, so I'm going to read them out now. David W. Bunn, age 47, he had a wife and five children. J. Franklin Bunn, age 39, had a wife. Russell Bunn, age 49, a wife and four children. William Cuffey, age 23. Warren Cuffey, age 33, wife and three children. George W. Cuffey, age 25, wife and one child. Oliver Kellis, age 39, wife. J. Robert Lee, age 33, wife. Louis H. Walker, age 26, wife and three children. John Walker, age 59, wife and nine children. And as you can see, there were, they had a lot of, there's still a lot of us there. These are just, they tried to say that we were extinct after this, but plenty of them had children and other family members around still. This is, honestly, in my head, it's like this conspiracy almost that they, it seems like the captain was like, okay, we'll get all these guys out there and we'll, during the storm, see what we can do to keep them on there and then cut off the rope that would get us to safety so that they all die. And then the newspapers and everything will publish that, oh, the Shinnecock are now extinct. The heart of the nation is dead. All the men are dead. Now they don't need as much space or anything. So we can start land grabbing all their, we can start taking more from them after they gave their lives to try to help us. It was a complete tragedy that, again, we tried to help these people. They hired us to help them get with their ship that had been stuck. And as soon as things go awry, they have a chance to take advantage. They cut the rope. And before that, they tell you, oh, if you leave, you're not getting paid. And at this point, the whales were almost hunted to extinction, not by us, by all the people that had come over here. So most of our livelihood was not the same. So these people needed the money. And as soon as thinking there it was going to be okay, they cut the rope. And then everyone conspired together and said, let's take more of the land and just make it even worse now that we can say that they're all dead. But as you can see, we're still here. I'm still around too. So around the tell, continue telling this story. And honestly, one day I would like to make a nice, it's not gonna be a night, it's gonna be a good movie, I hope. Be able to tell the story on the big screen where people can know what happened. But that's a future endeavor. There's some other, so we cannot prove that this, like some of this happened, but they're saying that people, the captain, when they're on the boat, so there's people on the shore trying to help the people on the crew. And the captain was not, it said that the captain was holding a gun to the crew because he wanted everyone to go down with the ship. You can't prove that because at least I can't. I was just told this from a reliable source, of course, but she also does not know. That's just one of the, it's a rumor almost, but who knows? People were pretty horrible back then. This is just a horrible tragedy. All right. I'm going to end this podcast by reading a poem. The author is unknown, but full credit is given to Miss Grace Valdez. And this poem is from this book by Arthur P. Davis in 1972, and they don't know the author of this poem either, but the book is called The Neck. All right, So here's the poem. The Circassian, 1876. I lingered by the ocean, and I saw not far away a hulk all black and broken, and in the sands it lay. Around it foams and billows, it looked to me a speck, and I asked a gray-haired mariner to tell me of the wreck. A gallant ship she was, he said, as ever plowed in deep, like a bird above the waters, I've seen her proudly sweep. When the raging storm was loudest, she foundered where she lies, and we upon the shores could hear the sailors' frantic cries. Think not that we were heedless of the fate of the brave crew. Strong men still watched and waited, but what could a mortal do? For the waves came thundering storeward, the sky above us scowled, and the night was dark and fearful, and the tempest raged and howled. We watched her as she struggled, and she made a gallant fight, as if she were determined to outlive the storm and night. We know the fright she carried, and the manly hearts on board, but the storm raged on all pitiless, the angry billows roared. The children of the tribe, a brother to the white man, free from treachery and bribe, and they, the very best of their friendly, trusting race, upon the decks of that doomed ship, with death stood face to face. They were cousins, uncles, brothers, Cuffy, Kellis, Lee, and Bun, who left their families and firesides to do a job that must be done. Save the ship, the captain shouted, the winds will lessen come the dawn, but on a hidden sandbar foundered, and daybreak, all life gone. Their bodies found encased in ice, and a scene too mournful to describe, from Mecox to Amagansett, lay the flower of the tribe. They were laid to rest on native soil, where the sunset meets the shore. The brave mariners of Shinnecock will sail the seas no more. I wish I knew who wrote that. Well, I guess that is the end of this podcast. Thank you for everyone who listened. Everyone who will listen from now and later. Another episode. It's first time doing anything like this. Honestly, not sure how it went. Hopefully, it didn't turn out horrible and it was super uninteresting and boring. Hopefully, people enjoy all the information I did, and hopefully I did a liberty. I noticed that I was definitely, I guess the right word is stuttering, or just having some problems. I don't know what was going on. Maybe just be me hyperanalyzing myself, but, so hopefully I did justice. Thanks again to everyone who, thanks to my Anthony's who gave me this, all this information. Shane, you put together a great pamphlet. Keep calling it a pamphlet. But very educational, lots of great information, definitely does the tragedy justice. Yeah, thanks everyone for listening. Watch out for next week. Within the next 2 weeks, there'll be another episode, but this time with an artist in resident. Should be a great one. And, all right, I'm your host, Hunter B. Gunn. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.